Paul and what he was doing here. So let's start by asking a question. And the question is the same one we ask of Brooke. Who's Paul?
A roller coaster enthusiast.
Sorry. Yeah.
A roller coaster
enthusiast. Mothers. I ask people this as we left. Does anybody know what his PhD is in? Can he say?
I don't know if it was his PhD, but he did something with archaeology.
Anthropology. Or was no, it was archaeology. You're right. Yeah, no, that was his undergraduate. That's where he started. He didn't actually say what his PhD was. Yeah. So, anyway, I'll tell you in a moment, but continuing with the list. Who's Paul? Yeah.
Studied internationally.
Okay. Cover everything he told us? Come on, it's a long time. He went on and on. Yeah.
He did research.
Okay. Okay. What kind of research in India?
He studied farming. Like coffee farms.
Okay.
And biodiversity.
Okay. What else? Who is Paul? Now.
He's energetic and excited about what he's working on.
Okay. That's legit. Are there any more memorable tangents that you went on? Just know they exist, but you can't remember them.
I mean, he talked about the when he talked about going on roller coasters, he got into a whole like 3 or 4 minute spiel about how one of them was the best and like the other two were pretty good, but like this one had all of them that he wanted.
So. Okay, so roller coaster enthusiast. Opinionated about some roller coasters. But the roller coaster enthusiast story was part of another story. What was the other thing that he talked about? There. The roller coaster story was just a precursor to him talking about what? Yeah.
It was how he didn't get into grad school, so he went on this roller coaster road trip, but then he was like, why didn't I get into grad school? So he called and then he got
there. Right. So, So how would you describe that in terms of who he is, do you think?
Yeah. He said life has dependency. He had to try to pass it, yeah, just try. Also.
quotes, because you had that nice thing about Pat McKenzie. Who knows what the NHPA is? Good, then it doesn't matter if I raise it. So, he follows the pass that are offered, but he also, you know, the fact that he called up a place also means that he had certain desires about following certain paths. So he follows the paths that are offered, but also makes some opportunities. Similarly, wanted to study archaeology, wanted to go to India, agreed to work with someone who said they could send him to India for research, right? So what are some other, anything else? It's a pretty paltry list, given how long you talked to Kat.
Kind of on that note, he was like a giver of life advice, I guess you might say.
He kept trying to be like, oh, another messenger. So he's teaching a class in the spring on careers in the environment, and I think I could hear him sort of working through some of that in the class. Yeah, so he's a giver of life advice. Yeah.
Just a leader of little change, or like, especially with the incidents we get, like, helping others be able to do their job easier.
Yeah, there was a whole part of his discussion about helping, facilitating change, and facilitating other people doing their work. Other things you got from his talk? Not only one of these has to do with actually most of the slides that he put up there, right? Anything from those slides that you remember from the actual research that you remember? Yeah.
Birds and frogs are a good indicator of how well the environment is.
Okay, so how does that translate into who Paul is?
He was checking that when he was in.
So, would you say he's interested in birds and frogs, or? What else is he interested in based on the research he's doing? Yeah.
And how industrialization decreases biodiversity.
Okay.
Wage that workers receive.
Okay, so I would say he's interested in labor, farm practices, he said industrialization. Is there another sort of feature? Another feature that he talked about in his lecture? Yeah.
I know he briefly touched upon how he was like the co-owner of a sustainable coffee growing company.
It was one of the other researchers, but yeah. He's also a collaborator with Indian researchers. And coffee growers, since one of them owns a coffee farm now. There's another topic, a research topic he touched on that actually people got kind of asked.
Was it the fertility rate?
Fertility rates in population, yeah. Anything else that you can think of? This is a pretty comprehensive list. There were some things. Tell lots of stories. Is there anything that popped out in addition? Yeah.
I just spent all day on these things.
Yeah. So he's not just. Yeah, that was one of the farmers, but he's not just interested in these sort of labor, farm practices, and industrial. Yeah, there's. he's interested in the very special forms of labor that go into making these coffee farms work. What? Let me ask a systems question. This sort of lists the different things that he said he was interested in. Fertility, population, birds, frogs, specialized labor, farm practices, industrialization. I guess you could say coffee. What was the, it was coffee and rubber, but there was a another nut that, arachia?
Yeah.
Is that, does anybody remember the actual, I'm bad too, I'm not remembering it either.
It's arachia.
Areca. A-R-E-C-A. So coffee, areca, and rubber as topics. What about his description of the links between these things? Let me ask this question differently. Did his presentation, was there something about Paul and his presentation of information about these that you found different from, let's say, someone else who might have presented this information? Had anybody heard this story before, this place, or these farms? Has anybody heard stories or lectures about biodiversity before? Was there anything different about Paul's version of a story about biodiversity? Yeah.
I thought it was interesting that he used it to like actually solve our own problem rather than like it's pretty easy to study that a species is going extinct and like maybe point out one or two reasons why, but to use that as evidence for something else and something functional or kind of economic or political, I thought it was interesting.
So it's interesting. You're saying that he, you know, provided some solutions or answers that seemed positive. Does anybody remember him talking about whether he was a problem solver or not? Does anybody remember him saying something about that? Yeah?
He said something like he wasn't a problem solver, he was something else.
I'm not a problem solver. He did actually say that he's not a problem solver. And yet one of your takeaways is, hey, there's a solution, an answer in here, which is really fascinating. And I just want to sort of highlight, we talked about this a lot before in systems thinking. There is systems thinking as a way of describing a situation or an issue, and there's systems thinking as a way of structuring an intervention in a system. Paul said he doesn't want to structure interventions, but here he is describing a story that seems to provide some answers about how you preserve biodiversity. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting because usually when people talk about biodiversity, they talk about how businesses harm it.
Okay, so he's talking about these particular businesses and suggesting that the way some of these businesses are run improves biodiversity. Now there's a lesson in here for systems thinking, and what do you think, what lesson might you take away from that observation that Paul made, or what's something you might learn from that related to systems thinking? Not looking for a right or wrong answer here, just some guesses. Everybody knows business is bad for biodiversity, right? How do you know that? Why do you think you know that? Yeah. So there's a question of exploitation and use of resources, right? But why is biodiversity affected by that? Yeah. Sure.
Habitat destruction.
Habitat destruction. We know that that certain businesses destroy or modify habitats in ways that are bad for biodiversity. And there's actually something about that in his work, yeah.
Well, he kind of touched on that, like, human intervention, like, increased biodiversity.
Right, in this particular case, yeah. But why is that, I guess my question is, why is that a surprise?
Because everything in agriculture has to be homeless, I guess.
Right, so there's a certain, and agriculture, particularly industrial scale agriculture, seems to homogenize the environment, right? It makes it all the same. We've heard in other contexts about monocultures and the relationship between just one species being grown and the likelihood of having more pests for that species be successful. So he's talking about a different situation, though, one where the diversity of the environment is cultivated in some way because that helps grow a particular kind of coffee. He also mentioned there's another variety of coffee that doesn't require that diversity of environment. But the thing that I was trying to get at with asking about systems and what this tells us about systems thinking, and also what it tells us for, I think, improving our own systems thinking, has to do with the question of challenging unexamined stories. So there are a lot of stories that we have about the way the world works, and many of them are based on good research, right? We do know that if you eliminate an ecosystem and you replace it with something that's homogeneous and completely just one species growing, we do know, we've got a lot of good research that shows that there are potential problems with pests for that monoculture growing up, and also that the diversity of life around that place tends to decline. But it's not true that all agriculture is monoculture, right? So what we've done when we tell ourselves a story about agriculture being bad for biodiversity is we've taken a step from something we've done really a lot of research on, monocultures and agriculture and ecosystems, and moving that story that we all understand well to all agriculture is like this. And Paul's research actually takes that story of agriculture is bad for biodiversity and challenges it by looking at a specific case that isn't about monocultures, and that's much more where the environment that agriculture is happening in is much more diverse. Why do you think he chose that research topic or that place to do research? There's some of his story told a little bit about the whys, but why would this be an interesting area to do research, do you think?
A biodiversity hotspot.
Biodiversity hotspot.
Probably unique in India, and it was an area with changing social systems, even from the north and south of the country, so that you can see many social differences.
Mm-hmm. So we know it's a biodiversity hotspot. There's a lot of social change going on between the south and the north.
Also, with a rapidly expanding population, you're going to add more economic growth, so you'd imagine there's going to be a loss of biodiversity.
Right, so you'd imagine that in a place like that part of India, there would be a loss of biodiversity. So he was sort of saying, oh, well, let's go look. Do you think he started doing the research thinking, oh, we're going to find a loss of biodiversity? He didn't talk about that very much, but yeah.
Kind of going out of that, with the growing population, you'd expect a lot of supply of labor, but the problem is they're still struggling because there's the jobs are ready to be away with a lot of people.
Yeah.
Yeah,
he was very interested in the people part of it, too. Matter of fact, his discipline, for those to get to that part of the story that he did not tell, he has a PhD in geography. He is a political ecology geographer. So he's interested in the relationship between politics and ecology on a spatial scale, and that's where his training is. But he never talked about that. Do you know what school he called to see if he could get into a graduate program? Did he mention that?
Oh, that's huge, but I don't know if it's Ohio State University or...
So ultimately he worked at Ohio State University, but that was not where he got his degree. May not be important. Clark University, which is in Worcester, Massachusetts. And for years they had a spectacular geography program. It was really, really well regarded. So there's certain another thing that was an interesting part of the place that he chose to look is, and he mentioned this just in passing, but it's a place where people have been living intimately with the environment for thousands of years. So the other sort of story that it challenges, right, the agriculture story that it challenges, the other story that it challenges is the story about people living in the environment being bad for biodiversity. How many people feel like people are bad for biodiversity in general? Come on, it's one of the oldest tropes in the environmental movement. Of course you believe it. And his research, again, challenges that viewpoint a little bit. It looks at specifics to try and figure out if that's really true. So what do you think, and so there's a story in here, a lesson in here about systems thinking. One is, you know, challenge conventional stories, or to check to see if conventional stories are true in particular settings. I think that's sort of his version of it. There's another system story here, though, too. And I sort of got at it by talking about what his discipline is. Is this a story of ecology? Is he looking at ecological systems? It's a little nod, yeah. These are trick questions. I'm not trying to trick you. So he's looking at ecological systems. What else is he looking at besides just ecological systems? Social systems, okay. So he's looking at ecological systems and social systems together. Anything else? We had a wonderful graph of coffee prices. What's that? Yeah. Economic system. Sure. And obviously, the boundaries between these different kinds of systems are fuzzy. So I'm not trying to say economics has nothing to do with social has nothing to do with ecology, of course. But I think the interesting part of the story that Paul told is he wasn't just doing research about biodiversity and documenting biodiversity. He also wasn't just doing research about how farmers can be successful and how coffee farmers are dependent on certain labor characteristics. He was doing research that linked those different systems and came up with some interesting observations about them. So what are the links? What are the links that we should take away from his story between these different systems? In other words, how, if you were sort of thrown into a setting where someone puts you in, you know, rural Wisconsin, let's say, and says, tell me about the relationship between, tell me about biodiversity in central Wisconsin. How might you start doing research on it after having heard Paul's story? It's probably a topic of burning interest for everybody in this room. I can tell by the looks of it. But if you were thrown into it, what would you? How would you approach it? Or how might you approach it?
Talk to people.
What an interesting idea! Talking to people to study biodiversity. And what would you? What kind of things would you find out from people?
How they interact with the land.
How they interact with the land.
Or if they do anything through there.
Mm-hmm. So it's a different approach to thinking about biodiversity in some ways, right? To talk to people first as opposed to just going out and counting the number of frogs. Would you still count the number of frogs?
It's
an important part of biodiversity. What else might you do differently going out in central Wisconsin to look at biodiversity? Having heard this story,
I
Yeah.
I guess, like, I would kind of, once after talking to people, like, seeing what, like, kind of their needs out of it are, and, like, what they use the land for, I'd, like, also go back and see, like, how that population has potentially changed. I feel like we talked a lot about those kind of, like, demographic transitions and seeing if that's had an effect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so he's, so I want to sort of put this back in terms of systems thinking a little bit. One thing that you did is you're asking about relationships that are not merely relationships among the parts that you're interested in, the biodiversity, sort of looking at the ecology, but you're saying, okay, well, people are part of the system too, so let's look at relationships among people to see if those affect relationships among organisms. You're also looking at a time component, right? Over time, you know, you can take a snapshot of how people are interacting right now, but over time, both people and ecosystems change, and looking at that change over time may help you understand better what's going on with the ecosystem. So he's suggesting a couple of things, right? He's suggesting looking for connections outside the particular system of interest, and he's suggesting looking at those relationships over time and looking at relations among people over time as a way of understanding relations between people and ecosystems. What else is going on here? Any other things that if you were to do research in rural Wisconsin around biodiversity, it doesn't have to be rural Wisconsin, it could be Madison. Madison's interesting too. Any other things you might look for as a systems thing? Yeah.
Agriculture.
So there's a whole system of agriculture and a system of commodity prices and other things like that. I'm reading into what you're saying just to save time because people are quiet today. But there's a whole sort of economic set of relationships that might be interesting for understanding ecosystems. Yeah.
Also, the good legislation that's got its impact.
Oh, interesting. So there's that's another sort of system, the political system, and the question of do legislative choices or policies affect the economics and also affect social movement? You know, there may be incentives for people to move or incentives for people to move into agriculture or away from it that are created by policies, and that would be a way of explaining that change over time. Yeah.
You might look at the history and see if anyone's studied that area before and maybe build off their research and challenge.
Sure. So there's not just the question of population change over time. There's also a history of the policies and the agriculture, and maybe even a history of the organisms that were in the area. So the suggestion is you can link all your understandings of all of these different systems in order to get a broader picture. But let me reel this back a little bit. Why did Paul look at these things? What do you think? He's got, you know, fertility and population, birds, frogs, specialized labor, farm practices, industrialization, and coffee, areca, and rubber. Why do you think he personally picked those things? Yeah.
He found connections between all of them.
He found connections. He was interested in India. Yeah.
And they're easy to connect back to the rest of the world.
So he saw clear connections after doing this particular research. But why, you know, this is kind of unique stuff. Why these things?
There were kind of things that had good data about them, like the change in fertility in India and the price of coffee and rubber.
So some of them had very good data already existing. He's the one, he and his research group are the ones that gathered the data about birds and frogs in this particular area. I mean, the bulk of his presentation, at least in terms of number of slides, was all about how they gathered this data on birds and frogs. Did this inspire anybody to go out and do frog-related research? Want to stand in the monsoon listening for frogs in the middle of the night? Anybody? How about birds, early in the morning, listening to birds? Yes, no? Not a lot of biological research. It's a special kind of nerd to go out and count owls at night by listening. There's a graduate student I was working with who actually is doing research on owls using microphones, just placing microphones. They're trying to find whether or not a particular owl is endangered in this part of Wisconsin is still here. they're placing microphones in all the places they think are the environment for that owl, and then just listening to hours and hours and hours of tape. The answer is, it's not there, which is like the most boring, you know, can you imagine, you know, setting up microphones over, you know, tens of square miles and listening to hours and hours and hours and hours of tape and finding that the answer is, so how many people want to go into biological research? Raise your hands up. Sorry for the digression. So there's this question of data being available, but also he went and sought data about particular things. But does that really get at the question of why he did this particular research, why he drew these connections? Does some of the who is Paul answer the question of why? I think one thing we didn't capture here, one of the things he said early on was that he was really interested in India. He actually sought out an opportunity to go to India because he was really interested. But what are, I'm not trying to make this a trick question, but I'm really curious. Why do you think he chose this package of things to do research on?
I feel like the picture he paints gives you a broad, generalized view of how biodiversity might be protected in other places as well through a lot of different viewpoints, like both socially and economically, and looking at that, how it's all contributing to the way it's being affected.
So a big picture view of it, of biodiversity that links it to social change, yeah.
I mean, the way that you showed it in the slides, it just seemed like he was focusing on the avian diversity first. Like, okay, so how does this get affected by something? And then he looked from that to tree diversity, and then he looked from the tree diversity into, okay, what affects the tree diversity? And then he looked into the coffee stuff, and then he found the coffee stuff, and he was like, what does that affect? And then just kept getting bigger.
So he's really has this impulse to sort of connect, he's sort of doing what Brooke talked about, but in a different way, the five whys. You know, he's sort of asking, well, why this? Well, why is this affected? He also showed some examples of earlier research that he did. Does anybody remember any of those? They're sort of towards the end of his presentation, he started talking about other research that he was doing. Does anybody remember some things from that may clarify why he makes the choices he makes? Yeah.
I don't know if this is it, what you talked about, like the sheep grazing on this like reserved land actually would help the bird change the population patterns there. And that kind of shows how like humans being involved in the land, like can someone group it or can work like together?
Really, really good memory. So yeah, he talked about doing research in a protected area and looking at the variation between wolves and panthers or something. I think some cat carnivore, and talked about how human intervention actually increased the productivity because there were more prey species available, because some of the animals that were eaten were not just the typical ones that were eaten, but also the animals were brought in for grazing. And they didn't want to, the farmers didn't want to complain because, of course, they were grazing illegally in this area. And they accepted that reduction in their herds as sort of a price of being able to graze here. But that increased productivity, that increased amount of prey, was really good for some animals and not so much for others. So essentially human intervention increased the overall productivity, which increased biodiversity in some ways and decreased the biodiversity in other ways. So he had a puzzle there and he wanted to go in and see that puzzle. Why is he always asking these puzzles that challenge conventional views of humans' relationship with the environment? Why is he interested in sort of going in there and you know, if the conventional wisdom is people are bad for the environment, why is Paul going in and asking research questions and saying, well, no, where the answer is, well, no, people aren't really bad strictly for the environment. They just affect it, and it's complicated. Why do you think he has that impulse?
Yeah.
He mentioned that he doesn't believe that any, like, he's believed in nature. He believes humans always have an impact on the environment, and nothing's truly natural. So, therefore, why do we always assume that it's bad? And obviously, some places are still, like, flourishing and thriving.
Mm-hmm. So he has a predisposition to ask these kinds of questions. And I don't know if you remember that cheesy little video that we showed that we asked you to look at for the very first class, talking about systems thinking. One of the things it says in there is that systems thinking depends on you having a perspective. You have a framework that you, a sort of lens that you use to look at the world, and that's where you start defining your systems. And so Paul is actually, he sees this pre-existing lens that people have of, people in the environment is often harmful for biodiversity. He has a different lens. So he has both all of this work that's been done by other people about people being bad for the environment, then he has his lens where he's like, what if it's more complicated? What if people might do good things in the environment under certain circumstances, or at least make our understanding of the environment more complicated? He has that alternate lens, and that comes up with a contrast between two different perspectives. So another systems thinking tool that comes out of this is the idea of adding another perspective, adding another framework, a framework of understanding to an existing system. And that's Paul's whole research agenda, and there are other people who are doing similar kinds of research. The whole field of political ecology and geography is about adding understandings of labor and social structures and culture to our understanding of ecosystems and the environment. So that's his perspective, and he wants to take those alternate snapshots of places we think we understand and provide a different look at it, coming up with different sets of relationships and defining a somewhat more complicated and different system. And do you remember his, he had a box and arrow graph of what was it? The invasion of mesquite into other forest areas. Do you remember that? Remember that big box chart? That was some of his earlier graduate research, and looking at all those different connections, trying to understand not just the biological invasive potential for mesquite, but also the social and cultural reasons why mesquite got brought to places and grown. Why would somebody bring mesquite to a place to grow it? But we have a couple of people from California here. Yeah, eucalyptus. Everywhere in California, right? What's it? Do you know where it's native? Yeah. It's growing all over Australia too. I think it is. That's what those koalas like to eat, right? But it's not native to California. It's invasive in many places in California. It's also grown throughout Africa now. And it reduces biodiversity in the places that it's grown because it doesn't provide as many food opportunities as some of the other trees that it's replacing. Mesquite is somewhat similar in different kinds of environments. But why do people deliberately bring some organism from one place to another? Why do they grow corn in Europe? Why do we have Norway spruce in the U.S.? Yeah?
They might think
there's an economic value. There's an economic value, right. And there's a whole economic system around it. It seems, when you just state it flatly, it seems obvious, right? Of course, there's an economic reason that people do these things. But looking at the interaction between those economic choices and the biological effects of them is not obvious. People don't necessarily do that a lot. And that's sort of Paul's way of looking at the world. He likes being a contrarian. He also doesn't particularly like fixing problems, but somehow his research points to possible fixes. It's kind of interesting. Anything else about who Paul is that you can think of from the experience of seeing him give his presentation? we didn't talk a lot about his role as an administrator or how frequently he visits the zoo with his kid.
Nah.
Okay. I'm going to switch gears a little bit. How many people read the reading assigned for today? Well, we're going to ask you to read it before the end of the week, so you'll get there. So what I'd like to do is I'd like to break up into groups. And why don't we do the groups that you're going to be working on for your midterm, just because it's easy. So you can hang with your buddies. And what I'd like to do is I'd like to answer just one particular question in the groups. And that is, I don't want to erase that just yet, but the question is a deceptively simple question. I'm going to use a different color here. What's the relationship between human systems, social systems, and human social systems and environmental systems? So this is a systems question, right? Because we're asking you to think about the relationship. So simple question, right? And just talk about that in the groups, and I'd like to hear some of your observations about the relationship between human systems and environmental and ecological systems, or social systems and ecological systems. Arise, move, talk.